Well, hello, everyone. And for this week's culture segment, I am privileged to be in studio with Zorro. Zorro, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks. Great to have you here. We get to interview some really cool, interesting people here on The Boundless Show. And it's always fun when we hear of folks who are passing through our neighborhood and we try to snag them when they have a good story to tell. Zorro is one of the world's foremost drummers, I would say. And I mean, right up there with Animal from the Muppets, right? Is it the two of you pretty much kind of neck and neck?
No, he's above me.
Oh, yeah.
I only aspire to be as good as Animal.
And I do appreciate the large chain he wears around his neck. You're looking a little subdued today for your craft, but that's okay. We'll let you do that. So, but he has played with the likes of Lenny Kravitz, Bobby Brown, The New Edition, Frankie Valli. I mean, you kind of span a number of different genres of music, as well as age spans, decades, types, venues. Pretty much all of it.
I've been fortunate to play a variety of great music with a variety of great artists, and I enjoy the different styles, and I don't like to be pigeonholed into any one thing. So yeah, it is a broad base of people, but it's just been sort of doors that God opened that allowed me to mingle with a wide variety of people as well.
Yeah, pretty cool. But you're known, now this is interesting to me because I don't know anything about this, you are known primarily or pinnacly as an R&B drummer. How, like, if I were to ask you what an R&B drummer is, what is that?
Well, from a musical standpoint, you know, rhythm and blues is known as a real groove-oriented music, mm-hmm. as opposed to very busy, intricate, you know, jazz fusion or something that's very... So, you know, R&B is known for having soul, and having... A drummer would define it as, if you're a great drummer, they would say, man, he's got a great groove or a great pocket. That means he makes the beat feel fantastic and makes people move, and it's, you know, there's a certain thing that a drummer tries to capture. So, you know, R&B encompasses a lot of what American music is really founded on. It was all founded on different forms of rhythm and blues, you know, from gospel to soul to jazz to funk, and rock comes out of rhythm and blues. So it's really just a definition of a person who really plays for the music and who really sets the pace for the music and serves the music, because that's what an R&B drummer does. He plays for the song, not for himself.
Okay. And you are referred to, I know, as the minister of groove. So others have called you that with all of your accolades that you've received. So regularly, you know, I know even, in fact, documentation said you were consistently voted the number one R&B drummer and educator in Modern Drummer, Drum and Rhythm magazine. So I have not subscribed to those myself.
Why not?
I know. I don't know why.
Just because you play flute doesn't mean you can't learn about us drummers.
That's right. I need to try more of that percussive flute playing.
Every instrument at the beginning of the day is rhythmic. Mm-hmm. Before it's anything, all instruments are rhythmic, and then melody flows after that. So
true.
We'll get you a subscription.
I gotta get into that. Okay, you started out in L.A. Life began in L.A., and you're one of a number of kids in your family. And I know you talked in, you are the author, I should say this as well, author of The Big Gig, which is quite a book. It's like how many pages
440 pages.
Yeah, okay, 440 pages that is really almost a primer. The subtitle is Big Picture Thinking for Success, but really on the music biz and how to be what you define as a sideman, kind of an independent musician, someone who goes out and does gigs, crafts a career out of playing with different artists. But really, it also is so useful just for succeeding in life in general, whether career, whether relationships. I mean, you have a piece kind of on all of those things in here, which I think is pretty cool. But tell us, you got your start in LA, and I know you even had a span of time growing up in Compton, California. Mm-hmm. So this is when the Compton folks who listen give a collective shout out. Hey, folks, good to hear from you. Why drums? How did you get started?
When people ask me, you know, why drums, it's one of those things. It's like, why do we do anything that we do? It's just it was an innate thing that God gave me. It's, you know, when we really flow and do what it is that God created us to do, there is nothing else for us but that, because that's what he put in our DNA. So he created me to be a drummer, amongst other things, but that was something that was given to me. I've done nothing to earn rhythmic talent. I was born with rhythmic talent. I could sense rhythm. I could feel rhythm. Now the difference is I partnered with God with the talent that he gave me. Then I did my part, because I believe that God gives us each a gift, a skill, a talent, which is free. Our gift back to him is what we do with it, what we turn it into, how we cultivate it, and ultimately we'll be judged on how we served with it. Because I won't get a reward when I get to heaven because I was a great drummer, because he's going to go, I know, I gave you that, mm-hmm. but what did you do with it? Mm-hmm. How did you serve me with it? How many people were blessed because you did what you did? How many people were inspired? Or was it all a journey of self? Or was it a journey of service? So to me, I recognized that I had this rhythmic gift and talent, and then I decided to work really hard and labor and really try to take this diamond's worth of potential and let it go through the process to where it can become a diamond that would be obvious to everyone else. Mm-hmm. And I feel that everybody out there listening has that diamond's worth of potential. But if I've did a little studying and research, and I wrote that in the book about like what it takes for a diamond to be made, and the process is a serious process before you finally, you go through all this tons of mud before you get this one diamond. But something I tell my children too, I said, you know, you don't suddenly, whatever I have has always been there. You don't suddenly have talent at a certain age or whatever. You have what you've always had. Maybe at a certain age you discover it or you have an interest in it, but it's always been there. But most people aren't willing to undergo the process of what it takes for that diamond to really shine. Mm-hmm. And that's just work, and that's labor, and that's retooling and reassessing and, you know, recalibrating every time you're trying to grow to another place. But I was destined to become a drummer because it was in my blood. It's what one of the things God called me to do. Hmm. So I guess you could say I was compelled to do it.
Sure. Okay. So so that's how you encountered drums. And I love the story how you tell about getting your first drum set and you basically thrashed it within the first couple of days.
couple hours.
Thanks for the investment, Mom. But anyway, no, that was great. And you talk a lot about your mom as well. But how then did you encounter Christ? How did that come about?
That came about, my mother was from Mexico City, and my mother grew up Catholic, and my mother had a strong sense of Christ and God and the family from an early age. So I can remember very early on, you know, going to the Catholic Church, and I can remember very early on, even before anybody told me about God, I could feel God's presence. Like at six, I knew there was a God. There was something just innate. It was like, there's a God. But after we left California, we moved up to Oregon, and then we began to attend Baptist churches, and it was in those Baptist churches that I was able to attend some of these summer church camps that a lot of these kids go to, and, mm-hmm. you know, it's for underprivileged kids.
There.
Yeah, you know, you go there for a week, and it's one of those places where, you know, they have a prayer meeting or, you know, two or three times a day, and you're praying eventually that they don't have any more prayer meetings so you could just play and have fun. Mm-hmm. But it was at one of those camps on one of those afternoons that they did an altar call, and the guy gave a message to receive Christ. And I remember walking up there to the Billy Graham song, Just As I Am. And I remember I could see myself at 11 years old, you know, walking up there crying, wanting to receive Christ. And then after that point, my mother would gather us around the television every time Billy Graham was on for a special. She'd say, kids, you know, Billy Graham's on. And every time he gave the altar call, I said it again. I always wanted to keep making sure that I was saved. You know, every mm-hmm. time there was an mm-hmm. opportunity, I was like, yeah, I receive it. You know what I mean? So it's just, I don't know, God was drawing me, you know, from an early age, and it was just a revelation. But at that age is when I like sort of officially remember mm-hmm. Making that, you know, verbal commitment.
Hmm. Cool. Well, and it's obvious, you know, I see that kind of those two stories dovetail, and you talk about this a lot in your story, just of how, and you alluded to this earlier, that need for that parallel understanding of what it means to, you know, those themes of perseverance. You talk about networking in the book, responsibility, excellence. And I love how you talk, especially about, you know, work with the drumming, how it wasn't just about, I think there's this misconception out there that, especially in the rock and pop world, you know, you just, all you do is you grab a mic and you go up on stage and either you have it or you don't, or you're just, you know, now we see the X Factor and American Idol and all these people that just seem to be born in a minute into stardom. But you really talk a lot about hard work and practice mm-hmm. and what it means to really, as you said earlier, hone your craft and then give it back to the Lord almost as an offering in that, which I think is cool. As you did that, and maybe you can give us a sense of time on this, What did that look like, that span of time up until you would receive what you would maybe describe as your big break?
Yeah, I mean, from the second that I started, I was like, you know, a Clydesdale horse with blinders on. Mm-hmm. Nothing existed but whatever that goal was. I mean, mm-hmm. the whole world could be falling apart. There could be an earthquake, and I'd still be drumming. I remember one year in my, 19 or 20, preparing for an audition for a group, a big-name group at the time, and I remember, practicing, 12, 13, 14 hours a day preparing for this audition. And I remember practicing and I forgot it was even my own birthday. I mean, I didn't answer the phone. I didn't do anything because I was focused on that. So there's been a lot of hard work. See, the thing is, you can luck up and, as somebody on American Idol, you can luck up and win and have a career for a minute or a year or two or three. But it's very hard to have longevity in any business, really, especially anything that's competitive, like entertainment or sports or whatever. And so the thing is, I was always interested in the long-term vision of what I was trying to build. And you can't play like somebody who's 50 until you're 50. You might have a lot of talent and you might have a lot of opportunities when you're young, but seasoning and wisdom comes over time, and you can't exchange the years for that. So I was interested in becoming a great musician and not necessarily a drum star or a rock star. Just I thought about, the art, and I knew that to be a great artist of anything required intense labor and intense focus, and I was willing to do that work. And I was very young at the time that I made those decisions, but as I look back on it now, it's like nothing worth building can happen quickly. Mm-hmm. It's impossible. It's the way God made it. When God wants to grow an oak tree, he takes 100 years. When he wants to grow a squash, he grows it over a summer. Mm-hmm. So anything that's really going to be substantial, and throughout your life, I feel God's trying to build something bigger than you can even see. And as you cooperate with the diligence and the labor and the willingness to partner with him, I wanted to represent God with excellence. And how could I do that if I wasn't giving my best to absolutely every part of my life? Mm-hmm. There's a quote, and there's over 400 motivational quotes in the book. And the reason why there's so many quotes is because I've always loved the power of words. And I clung on to words as a young boy without a father. I always clung on to phrases and words that could help me believe in myself. But one of the quotes in there I love that just really sums up so many people in life, it says, "The rarest thing a man or woman ever does is the best they can. The rarest thing we ever do is the very best we can." Because you think about it, every single day, at the end of the day, can you say, "I've given this day my absolute all. I've given my wife my absolute all, my children, my work." Mm-hmm. We leave so much on the table.
Yeah.
And so I figured life is so short. Why do I want to get to the end and go, I didn't give it my all in all of these areas. Mm-hmm. And I it's just something God put in me. He just put this driving spirit, like a Daniel, that I wanted to be excellent, but mm-hmm. not for my own sake, but to lead others into that place of excellence, to honor God and be all that he created us to be.
Mm-hmm. So how did you, Zorro, because I know you talk a lot about, like you said, networking and how you know someone who knows someone who knows someone, and then you get this gig, and sometimes you do one-offs, and sometimes you're on tours, and you talk so much about studio recording versus live touring and all the different aspects to that, and it's just like dizzying. I don't even know. I mean, some people just like to show up and sit at a desk and know where they're going to sit every day, and you did not live that life
at all. Wild life.
Exactly. It's a wild life. And how do you, in addition to doing all that and having to be your own CEO and your own marketer and stuff, as you made these decisions to join tours or to, be back certain artists or whatever, did you have like a litmus test that you had? Were there moral conflicts that came into play as far as who you would choose to play with or not, or just time constraints, or how did you winnow all that out?
There were all of those things. I mean, ultimately, I always sort of, if I knew exactly what God wanted me to do for every day of my life, I would just do that. But since you walk by faith, I ask him. And I'll just, if there's an opportunity that comes up to play for somebody, I'll pray and say, "Lord, I'd love to do that gig. But if it's not your will, then shut it down. If it is your will, then open the door and then let me accomplish what I'm supposed to during my time with that artist or that season." I always look at every one of these things as like an assignment. And I always look at every gig and job and being in the business of people as like, the work of my father is the work of people. God cares about people, and he's always going to use whatever gifting or skill or talent we have to connect to other people. You know, whether you're an undertaker or a drummer, mm-hmm. you're connecting to people. And so I always look at it in that sense, okay? This is not just a gig. This is who I'm going to meet on that gig. And for instance, when I was touring with Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, and Frankie's an American pop legend. He's got the biggest thing in New York, the Jersey Boys. And I prayed about that gig, and there was another gig with another real famous artist at the time, and I could have went either way. And I just felt like the Lord leading me to the Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons thing. And it was during that time when I was with Frankie that, not through the gig, but through people I met during that time, that I end up meeting my wife. And now we've been married for 17 years. So destinies change with certain decisions. And so the only thing I've learned to do is go, Lord, what do you want me to do and what jobs do you want me to do? And when I'm done, shut the door down. Or if I audition for something and I don't get it, just give me peace about it. I go for everything that comes down, the opportunities that seem like, you know, they're God-led. But since you don't have a written contract from the Lord saying these are the 12 I want you to do, you move by faith. Mm-hmm. And I also believe that whenever you make mistakes, and we'll never know what mistakes we made until we get to heaven, because you don't know when you said yes to this what you said no to. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a different altered reality, right? So you're mm-hmm. like, was this the right one? I'll never know. But I know that if we do make mistakes, that God just rewrites the script. Oh, Zorro missed it on that one. So we'll rewrite the future based on he messed up on all these 12 things I had for him. You know what I mean? But it's like that old game when we were kids where you draw on it and then you lift the sheet and then you draw a new picture. Mm-hmm. I kind of look at it like that. God just, okay, even right down to the last second of your life. He's given you this plan that he has and you're following it completely by faith. But it took a lot of courage, actually, to meet people and to put yourself out there. It's not the talent. It's really the courage. Mm-hmm. It's the courage to just go. I was never afraid to introduce myself to anybody. I'd see Ray Charles at the airport and go right up to him and start talking to him. Mm-hmm. His entourage wants to push me away, but as soon as I start talking about music and I mention his records and I could talk about a certain lick on an album, he was like, mm-hmm. he wanted to talk to me. You know what I mean? So it's a certain boldness, but I think the boldness comes from God has given me this. He tells me to be bold. And when you step out in faith, that boldness is part of faith. It's mm-hmm. like you're believing that by being courageous, he's going to do something.
Mm-hmm. Now, are there some artists, though, that maybe, or and maybe there aren't, I don't know, are there some artists you wouldn't work with because of their specific message or like go on tour with or whatever?
Sure. I you know, unless the Lord directly...
Did you tour with Marilyn Manson?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
Oh, did I? Or
did you?
No, I didn't. Okay. Marilyn Just Monroe, checking. No.
You're not that old. Okay.
No, how do you know? I'm kidding. No, anyway, specifically, if I know a group is a totally demonic, devil worshiping group that everything they represent is total darkness, I would probably say, no, I'm not into that. On the other hand, if there was a group that, you know, they were maybe into some dark things, but they really didn't know what they were doing, meaning it's just they're playing part of the whole image of the whole thing, and they're not. And I felt like the Lord said, I want you to be there. See, I've never been afraid to be around darkness because I realized that I am the light. In many of the situations I've been in my career for 30 years, I've been the only light that people have ever seen. Mm-hmm. I've been the only person who had enough courage to tell them the truth, to share the faith without worrying about what they thought of me. And I've always been a very radical evangelist. I mean, it wasn't uncommon that I'd be on tour with people. I'd be on tour with Lenny Kravitz, playing one night and speaking at a church the next night, mm-hmm. and carrying around hundreds of books and Bibles to give out to people because I looked at that as a mission field. Mm-hmm. And the mission field also right within the band itself, the people in the band, the crew, the managers, just those were just people who needed to see light and see God's people, but not have me judge them, but just have me love them. Mm-hmm. And I found that to be super effective, and I was able to minister to tons of people that had I said, no, I can't be around any people that are less than perfect, then those people would never know about the gospel. Jesus came for the lost, not the righteous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's almost like you're in corporate America, you know, working with a bunch of people who are lost and doing a job and doing, that's...
Well, you nailed it right there, Lisa, because a lot of people think, When you're in a corp, when you work for a corporation, you know, there could be hundreds of people there. Mm-hmm. There's people into all kinds of stuff there. Mm-hmm. Just because they wear a suit and ties doesn't mean they're not doing all kinds of dark stuff. Mm-hmm. There's lost people. There's Christian people. You can't say, well, I'm not going to take a job at Apple because they're not all believers.
Yeah.
Then who are you going to minister to? Right. You're preaching to the choir then. So, but a lot of times in rock and roll, I'll get young people saying, well, if you're a Christian, how come you played for so-and-so? And I'll say, well, what do you do? And they'll say, well, I'm a plumber. I said, well, do you qualify them as being Christians before you return their calls, or do you just do the job you're supposed to do and mm-hmm. be pleasant while you're doing it?
Yeah.
We all have a job to do.
Yeah. So what, this is just kind of a question out of curiosity, what would you say are some of the bands out there today that are really displaying genuine talent? Like ones when, I mean, because you've been in the business forever, and if you were to just say, you know, some of the bands, mainstream, you know, otherwise, where you're like, these are not just a marketing ploy, these are some genuine folks out there playing good music.
I mean, there's tons. There's so many, you know, there's a difference between, like, you know, like a lot of the American Idol type of people that are just trying to be, you know, music stars for a minute. And there's a difference between, you know, people who have like a singing talent. There's people that fall in the category of great singers. Then there's people who fall in the category of bands. And then there's worship music. I mean, it's a long list. I mean, I think there's plenty of talent out there. Mm-hmm. What I think there's a lack of is people who understand what that talent is for.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in other words, they don't understand the purpose of the talent.
Mm-hmm.
See, the purpose is not just to get famous and to get rich. The purpose is like you impact people. Mm-hmm. That's the whole point of it. And a lot of the people that I've met that are younger, they're still lost into the, I want to be a celebrity, I want to be a star, I want to be worshipped. But I've been around the people that are already worshipped and that are stars, and many of them fall to the wayside. Many of them self-destruct because they failed to acknowledge what the purpose of the gifting was, and just being famous and rich and good-looking was not enough to sustain life. So I'm more interested in, you know, whether they have talent or not, is teaching them, well, here's the purpose of your music. But talent is, there's never a shortage of talent in mm-hmm. the world. God has given so many people and musical gifts and talents. Now, not everyone will be known, and not everyone will be recognized. But, you know, I listen to a wide variety of music. I have over 10,000 CDs in my collection. And I have, wow, like, you know, thousands of iTunes downloads. So I just love music. Mm-hmm. I put on all kinds of music, and music inspires me. And it doesn't have to be just Christian music. You know, all the notes belong to God. Whether they're Christian or not, the 12 notes on the piano, they're all God's notes. Now, the difference is, are you playing out of a heart of worship, or are you playing out of a heart of worshiping yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Because God has given many men great songs to write that never served him. He wasn't going to take the gift back. And if they were faithful to develop that gift and turn that songwriting into something extraordinary, he would never take it away from them just because they didn't serve him. So to me, you know, God gives talent to all kinds of men.
Yeah.
The wise ones eventually try to figure out, well, what is this for? And where is the happiness going to come? The happiness is only going to come when you're really serving.
Yeah. I always like to kind of, you know, pick folks' brains when they come, especially if they're a few steps ahead of some of our audience, you know, many of whom are millennials, young adults. And I know you have Zorro International Ministries. You're very involved with the work of young adults and very passionate about that. And it kind of, my final question here as we wrap kind of ties into that, Zorro, and that is, why do you think so many young adults today have difficulty finding a sense of purpose? Why is there so just this struggle to make it through their 20s and 30s and find, whether it's in their career or whether it's in relationships or, you know, with Christ or without Christ, that sense of purpose seems to be so driving, but it's so elusive these days?
Because they live in a world where they're bombarded with false values and false sense of purpose, and they're bombarded by television shows that have no purpose whatsoever, not teaching anything, not showing anything. They see a whole world becoming celebrities by doing nothing. They don't exercise a skill or a gift. So there's a whole generation duped into thinking that there are shortcuts to this thing called life, and there isn't any. You know, life is a battle. Life is a struggle. And this delusion that it's anything but that is a false sense. So I think when when people that are young experience all of these trials and tribulations, they think, what am I doing wrong? Because all these other people on TV seem to be just living the grand life, and they're missing it all because they're being bombarded with false messages. And the other thing is, they make their identity in what they do rather than in who they are. The minute we really believe that God loves us, that we don't have to earn his love, that he's created us for great things, that we already have his approval, as he already loves us, we're so used to performing for people in life that we can only be loved if we're famous or if we're rich or if we're good looking or if we have this position. So we're so used to a false world of false ideals that we don't really believe that God just loves us. If we really believe that, it'd be like getting a get-out-of-jail-free card, and then we could be free to be who he made us to be. And the other thing is to learn to live and not live for man's approval. If you live for man's approval, you'll always be, your chain will be yanked in every direction. I don't live for the approval of other people. There's a lot of people who judge me based on the way I look, and they don't approve me from just their first glance at me. And they, you know, but they, how can you tell what's in a man's heart? There's no way you could see what's in a man's heart based on his outward apparel. So to me, it's like this: the idea is to give your heart over to the Lord, and then understand and receive that he loves you. And then it's like you're not living for other people's approval, and it takes the pressure off. And then you know that he already said there's going to be trials and tribulations. But he said, "Be of good cheer, for I have overcome the world." That's where my confidence comes from, is that I know that, yes, these things will come, these trials and tribulations. Jesus warned me they'd come, but he said with them I'd overcome them. But my identity is that I'm a son of the living God. Mm-hmm. I'm an heir to the throne of God. I'm seated in high places. And so I really learned to believe it. And then if I believe it, I'm not worried, because we spend most of our lives seeking the approval of other people who won't even be in our lives. And when we die, it is only God who's judging us. None of those people that we put so much stock in of what they thought about us mattered. My father-in-law always tells me something. He goes, "You know what people are going to say about you, Z?" I said, "What?" He goes, "Whatever they want." Mm-hmm. In other words, people are going to talk about us. People are going to think whatever they think. You just keep walking with the Lord. Mm-hmm. You just keep serving God. And I've learned it in my life, that as I've made the priority of my life to fulfill my purpose in God, why am I here and what did you create me to do, and I'm willing to do that work. As I've done that, God has opened up all kinds of doors that other people try to keep shut, because he'll just go around it and he'll backdoor it. He'll cause somebody to have a dream and say, you know, invite Zorro, whatever, mm-hmm. because I've made my priority his kingdom, mm-hmm. and his kingdom is people. So I think if the people are listening, whatever it is that you're doing in your life, make people your priority in that and not yourself, and God will elevate you.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, we've been talking to Zorro, folks. Again, the book is The Big Gig, Big Picture Thinking for Success. You can find out more about Zorro at ZorroTheDrummer.com. He's also on Twitter and Facebook. And hopefully we'll see you in our parts again sometime soon as you're traveling through all your gigs, your big gigs.
I would love to. Thank you so much, Lisa, for the privilege and the opportunity to be here and to share with your listeners. And I'd be happy to come back anytime. It was great. You had some very insightful questions, and you're a great interviewer.
Great to have you. Thanks so much.
Thank you.